everyone. Welcome to another episode of Mold Talks Docs. Today, I have Dr. Jabin Moore with me here today, and we're going to talk about mold exposure, the effects of it, and how to recover from it. So, Dr. Jabin, thank you for coming on and being here.
Of course, man. This is a major problem that not near enough people know about. You know, the statistics are insane. 50% of buildings are being mold damaged at the minimum, and that's just the ones that we know about. And this is affecting absolutely millions of people's lives every single day, most of which don't even have a clue. Many of the people that I'm working with have been at so long, their health is just taking a beating. I'm talking chronic illness, difficult to get out of bed for people that are in the worst states, but it's affecting people in so many different ways that aren't showing up until they reach states like that.
Yeah, you know, it's crazy too. I saw this statistic. Over 50% of the world's population deals with at least one chronic condition. So, you know, obviously looking at health holistically and seeing how big of a piece that air quality is missing in most people's awareness is such a huge, huge endeavor. You know, just that kind of brings me to this point. You know, how many people that come to you, would you say, if you had to put a percentage to it, do you suspect had some exposure to mold that helped create the condition they're in?
I mean, at this point, it's probably 40 or 50% of the people. And again, I'm working with people that are coming to me for Lyme disease, for parasitic infections, for autoimmune disease, autism, PANS and PANDAS. And just by saying PANS and PANDAS, which is a weird thing that people don't know about, it's actually inflammation in your brain created by an immune response. But it's for pediatrics, it's kids. They're estimating right now one in 200 kids is dealing with this. And I can tell you it's far higher than that based off what I'm seeing. But 100% of the kids that have come to me when tested for mold have tested positive. So this is a major thing that I'm seeing. And I'm like, it may not be 100% of kids, but it seems like mold is suppressing the immune system in just the right way, where it's allowing for these other infections that are being blamed for PANS and PANDAS, like strep, mycoplasma, viruses. Those are the more common things blamed for PANS and PANDAS. But I think mold is suppressing the immune system, allowing that to happen.
You know, with mold, we have things like bacteria also present because it kind of enters with water damage, right? And so some of those situations can come bacteria as well. But just to kind of dive out, let's zoom out for a second. We talk about exposure, right? I would say from my experience, and I'm not a doctor, so happy to have you kind of weigh in on this, but it seems like the inflammation that's caused by this exposure really kind of, if we simplify things, creates the biggest issue. Is that kind of what you're seeing as well?
So inflammation is a major part of it. A lot of the testing that we use, whether it's C4a or even C-reactive protein, these inflammatory markers in your blood go up due to mold. And that going up is due to inflammatory cascades. So the body's releasing cytokines, trying to defend you, trying to protect you. You've got this toxin that is backing up or slowing down the liver, clogging up the gallbladder. When it does that, now you have more mold toxins left in you, but you also have the waste from your own body, from other bacteria like ammonia. You have yeast, funguses growing. So this cascade of inflammation, just, it's like a mushroom cloud. It just keeps going up, and it goes up very rapidly with some people with mold. But yeah, inflammation's got to be probably the first most easy marker to notice outside of some of the other damages that are being done through mold.
Yeah, no, good points. And we talk about this. It's so interesting because when I'm interviewing with clients, I'm trying to get an understanding of what's going on. You know, they're telling me that they go from doctor to doctor, doctor to doctor. I mean, I've had people go through 40, 50 different doctors before they finally find someone who's like, hey, you may want to check for environmental exposures, because that may be part of the puzzle. Obviously, you know, that prolongs the amount of time that they're suffering while they're looking for these answers, having to go through all these different doctors and kind of being led around in a circle. You know, what's interesting is we have 159 publications, I believe it's 159, regarding the effects of water damaged buildings and how that impacts our health, right on PubMed. But yet it seems to be something that we're not looking at in the medical community, unless it's a specialist like you who's more aware of that. And so, you know, how do we change the narrative? How do we get, you know, this to become more of a prominent thing that's checked for in this society, because I think right now that's kind of one of the big parts of the problems. And I'm sure you've seen it too, where people come to you and have already been through 40, 50 doctors and you're like, yep, well, I guarantee you, if you check your environment, there's something there.
You know, that's a super common issue. I had a woman just yesterday who came into my clinic. It's been 18 years of chronic illness. She's so anxious. She can barely leave the house. Her bowels are so disrupted that, you know, she has to stay near a bathroom at all times. She's going to the bathroom after every time she eats, diarrhea. She's just a constant fear of being away from a bathroom. She's been to doctors for the last 18 years. I think she said the number was in the 20s. She's had every medical type physician, whether it's neurologist, cardiologist, endocrinologist, gastrologist, all the ologists check her out. And they just say, you know, you're dealing with whatever diagnosis that they want to give her in that moment. So I said, okay, let's step back and let's just see, okay, what have you been through? And she gave me her history, because I start with childhood. I start, you know, were you a colicky baby? Did you get sick a lot as a kid? Did you have trauma? Okay. Have you ever lived in mold is my next question. Do you have mold in your home now? Has this been ever, have you ever been checked for these things? Do you have amalgams in your mouth? So I go through this long checklist of all the possible things that people miss, right? And I just keep adding to my checklist because I catch a new patient with whatever that thing is. So often it is mold. Like you just said, it is mold that is being missed because they don't smell mold in their home, or they had an air sample test, which is garbage. If it's just one done in a home when you're trying to buy it, not nearly enough is known about how to appropriately test for mold. So for me, the conversation now in medicine has gone from nothing about mold at all. I mean, even in mainstream medicine, there was no conversation of mold 20 years ago, really. And then now you've got doctors like Richie Shoemaker, Neil Nathan, Dr. Jess Petros, who's a great friend of mine. And that is slowly starting to change. No different than let's put lead in our pipes. Let's put asbestos in our tiles and our air, our walls. You know, it's slowly starting to migrate because it's starting to affect so many people, and doctors are slowly starting to catch on. But I think for this to really become at the forefront of knowledge for people, we've got to educate the average person to change the market. Right now it's, let me spend $400 to have a mold test done at my house before I move in. Okay, that's negative, great. Well, that test was garbage. So if we can educate the population through podcasts, through Instagram, through Facebook, and get that high enough of knowledge, well, then guys like you, guys like Brian Kerr, PJ Harlow, all these people that are trying to get the word out there are going to start to gain following, right? So then other mold inspectors go, hey, that guy or mold remedies, that guy's doing really well. What is he doing? And I'm seeing that already, because I'm seeing newer guys calling my clinic saying, hey, we do mold remediation the right way. And I'm like, do you now? Let's let's ask the questions that I want to ask for people that want me to put you on my list of to be referred to. And so I think it is starting to happen, but we've got to tell everybody. It's got to be mainstream public knowledge to make this make a change. And that's what it took for cigarette smoking, right? It had to become mainstream knowledge that that's not good for you. And then it shifted, but we've got to shift it enough that your regular mold inspector doesn't get any calls because they don't trust them.
Yeah, no, I think we've all seen that ad for Camel with a doctor in the 1970s saying, you know, I'm a doctor and I smoke Camel, right? So yeah, I mean, it takes a while for change, unfortunately, and we're probably 20 years into that 50-year curve, because it was 50 years where everybody was smoking. I mean, you could deliver a baby and somebody was smoking in the delivery room. Mm-hmm. It's pretty wild to think back on that. So yeah, I mean, modern medicine being 50 years old and whatnot, and we have a lot of catching up to do, I think. It starts with, you know, shifting our mindset, I think, in the medical community, right? Like when you go to the mainstream medicine, a lot of people, they just want to put people in baskets, right? Baskets with a label. This is what you have. No inclination as to how you got there, but here's what it is. And here's the magical treatments that'll, you know, help you minimize your symptoms. And, you know, it's people like you, obviously, that are going at the root cause approach to figure out what is actually causing these symptoms and making those repairs, right? Because that's what's really needed in medicine. Otherwise, you're just suppressing symptoms. You're not actually getting better.
Root cause, functional medicine, mainstream medicine, they're all different types of medicine. And like you said, it's we need to know why. We don't always have to start with why, honestly. I mean, I'm a root cause guy. We don't always have to start with the why. If you're living in a moldy house and you can't get out for a few months, or you can't get a remediate in there for a few months, we may not start with the why, but you got to know why. You've got to understand what's creating the problems. I mean, shoot, I just put out some information into my social media and email list just saying like, hey, if you don't feel well and you don't have an idea of what could possibly be adding to that, and you keep getting bounced around saying, here's a pill. Well, your red blood cell count's low, you're anemic. Those aren't whys as far as you're feeling bad. They're part of the puzzle. You've got to find the why. The whys are typically toxins, traumas, or infections. Those are your typical whys. Now, if you don't eat enough food or something like that, or you were born with a genetic malformation, okay, yes, there are a few other whys, but your main three for a person that's been well till they're 40 and all of a sudden the floor falls out from under them, toxins, traumas, and infections. And it doesn't have to be that day that the fourth floor fell out. It can be years in advance. It can be years coming. I mean, for instance, my mother, I was just sitting at a dental conference and I was listening to Kelly Blodgett speak. And he was talking about women who, a woman in his clinic that he worked with that had some teeth issues. And after this big, huge procedure, removing wisdom teeth and putting in a couple implants, within a few years, her life changed and it tanked. And I'm looking back, I'm texting my mom. When did you get your wisdom teeth pulled? Cause I remember being really young. I was like 6, 8 years old. I remember it happening though. And then 4 years later, I'm 10. She can't get off the couch. She can't function. It took 4 years for her health to decline. And this is what happens with mold. So if you move into a new house, it's not that day for most people. It's not that week or that month for most people. Some people, yeah, there are people that react that quickly, but usually very healthy individuals are good in life that move into a home with mold. It's a slow trickle for most. And a year, two, three, seven. I just had somebody 2 days ago, 7 years living in a house. And I'm like, how long have you been sick? 4 or 5 years. Okay. When did you first start noticing your life was different? Maybe 6 years ago, but I just kind of blew it off. Okay. When's the last time you moved? 7 years ago. Have you checked your house for mold? They're like, you know, they just sit back, their eyes open. They're like,
oh shit. Yeah.
Oh no. I'm like, well, here's the link to an ERMI. Here's the link to inspectors I trust. Here's the link to remediators. you know, like I got all these linked up on my site for my clients. I'm like, let's get the testing. Let's see. Cause I also had other information on this person. The reason why I went down that rabbit hole is I had labs, and my labs were an organic acid test that showed me specific markers that I associate with mold, such as oxalates, mitochondrial dysfunction, methylation toxic exposure markers. So I see all this stuff and I'm like, hey, so there are only two things that crush your mitochondria quickly: mold and radioactive elements. Outside of that, literally nothing else that I see, not Lyme, not Borrelia, Bartonella, Ehrlichia, parasites, Strongyloides, nothing else crushes your mitochondria like those two things. So when I see testing that shows mitochondrial dysfunction, I immediately jump to which one of these two things could it be? Let's run testing for those. I've been wrong once or twice, I'm sure, but that is like my immediate, like, okay, let's check this out.
Red flags. Yeah. So it's interesting what you said, because there's kind of two things to unpack here. The first thing is, earlier you talked about Lyme disease, pens, pandas. And you also mentioned just the fact of, like, you know, mold over time, right, can make people unwell. But what's interesting about this and why I think it's so vital to kind of dive into this more is the fact that I too get called by patients who have pens, pandas, Lyme disease, autoimmune disease, autoimmune disorders, MCAS, multiple chemical sensitivity, right? And what's the one thing that they all have in common is they all feel worse when they're in an environment that has water damage and mold and bacteria. And so I always found that interesting, because I'm not saying that it causes those conditions, but it certainly doesn't make someone who has any of those conditions put them in a perspective where they can really heal. As a matter of fact, it makes them feel much worse. The other thing to talk about is kind of how, you know, you mentioned that these people over prolonged exposure, right, 6, 7 years, 4 years, whatever it may be, they started feeling unwell. And of course, I mean, this happened to me too. I was dealing with mold exposure, 10 years of exposure, even acute exposure with the protection that I wear when I go in people's homes is still not 100%, right? So in looking at that, I started not feeling well. And it wasn't until this past couple months that I was like, I need to do something. I need to get detox. I started exercising, eating clean, saunaing like every single day. And then naturally I started to feel better. It was interesting. Like I wasn't sweating at first. And then I would say after about 7 days of sitting in the sauna, all of a sudden click, I was able to sweat again. So it's very interesting to see how it works even for me personally. But I mean, you know, one of the things people say is like, well, mold's not really that big of a deal unless you happen to be sensitive to it. You know, I wouldn't consider myself sensitive to it, but I can tell you that prolonged exposure, I started not to feel well. And it's such a slow degradation that you really don't really realize it. And you start to say, well, maybe it's I'm getting older, you know, I'm not in my 20s anymore, I'm not invincible anymore. And I started to normalize it, which I'm sure so many people do, instead of saying, I gotta fix myself.
Yeah. Well, you brought up a couple of things there. And I'm just gonna unpack the first one, the Lyme one. I'm a guy that I got in this whole profession because I had Lyme and I thought, okay, Lyme is this big, bad, ugly, and I need to figure it out. And then honestly, I figured it out pretty well for the cases that I was seeing. So then the cases got harder. And that's just how it works when you're in this profession. You start getting people well, harder cases are going to come in. So people with mold started coming in. And now, again, I started because of Lyme. Now I will say this, pleomorphism is real. Pleomorphism is the study of these organisms. So for instance, there are studies on PubMed about H. pylori. H. pylori can be a normal, healthy, functioning member of your microbiome. It doesn't necessarily have to be pathogenic. E. coli, staph, strep can be normal, harmoniously living organisms that help you synergistically in your body. When you bring in mold, when you bring in radioactive elements, when you bring in these toxicities that have no business being in your body, and you bring them in at a consistent enough rate, at high enough doses, it can trigger pleomorphism, which is for those synergistic bacteria to now grow out of control. Just like, say, cancer, for instance, normal, healthy tissue, something happens, now they become pathogenic, they can kill you. So it's now my opinion that is Lyme bacteria still potentially bad? Yes. Do we still have to work on it and control it? Yes. Is mold possibly what allows for it to get to that state? Absolutely. So you have to pay attention to mold and go, okay, so if I can't get better, I have Lyme, right? I can't get better. Was it a trauma that's suppressing my immune system? Is it mold suppressing my immune system? So start looking. If you've, especially for those who have done all the things, right? So for you Lymies out there, I'm one of you. If you've done antibiotics, if you've done antiparasitics, if you've done herbals, and you haven't looked at mold, start looking at mold. So it's opened my eyes to understand pleomorphism, to understand that Lyme is a bacteria that we will never eradicate. There are more than 40,000 named bacteria in our body. We're never going to eradicate it out of our body. What we're going to do is we're going to get it down from this toxic pathogenic burden down to a burden or a level where it becomes synergistic with the other bacteria and they all start working together to defend you. Mold can knock that back out, by the way, but it also, when you get the mold out, those things, as you lower them, so you still use herbals to reduce the Lyme bacteria, I still use that. So I reduce it. And now when you're not in a toxic state, when your immune system isn't in fight or flight, now at that point, your body can level out. And if a tick bites me, I don't care as long as I'm not in mold. And I've actually traced my sickness back to living in a moldy basement back in college. And I'm like, wait a minute. I was perfectly healthy from my memory until I went to college and I stayed in this dirty, nasty, dingy basement where after I moved in there, I had surgery. My lifts didn't go up. My injuries went up. My fatigue went up. Not to the point where I could, like, I wouldn't have told anybody that. I was just like, I stopped progressing athletically at like 20 versus even older. And in shot put, which is what I did, usually you progress till you're like 32. So that's unpacking that piece. It's like mold allows for these other things to become a big problem.
And you didn't really realize that until you reflected on it. Like at the time, I mean, you just thought this was all normal.
I figured out that I had Lyme when I was about 25. I figured out that mold probably played a role in that at about 33, 34. I think I was literally on a podcast with Brian Kerr. And I was just like, I was just sitting there telling him my story. And I go, oh, crap. I stayed in mold. Like I can remember seeing mold growing up the baseboard. I remember a squeegeeing water back to the drain when it came up. And I was like, I'm paying $100, $150 a month. So be it. Now I'm looking back going, dang it, what did that cost me in tests, supplements, and everything? But honestly, I'm glad it happened because I'm here today because of all of that. I'm the guy I am today and able to educate and help heal others with my story because of it.
No, it's a big defining moment for you for sure. And it sucks that you had to suffer to get there. But of course, unfortunately, as you know, many people do suffer before they kind of realize that. I wanted to talk about something you said a little bit earlier about, you know, how mold has no place in our bodies, right? And this is for people who genuinely say things like mold's everywhere. There's nothing I can do about it. And I think it'd be important to kind of unpack this, and I can help with the house side of things. And I know you'll be able to chime in on the clinical side of things, but the problem with mold in our homes isn't the fact that it's, you know, just mold in general. There's typically too much mold, right? And I think that that's an important thing. Cause if you go outside, yes, you take a breath, you're going to inhale some mold spores, but you have an infinity volume of air outside and a much, much, much smaller volume of air inside. So what happens is when you're in this moldy environment, you have more particles that enter your body with every breath you take, which you take about 20,000 of those every single day. And so the amount of contamination that can enter your body indoors versus outdoors is far, far greater. And I'm imagining that's got to play a significant role into the health piece because of that. And that's why you feel worse inside your house than outside your house. And I think that that's an important thing to unpack, because if you are thinking that, you know, mold can impact me if it's in my house because it's outside, because it's part of our ecosystem, unfortunately, you're going to go down the wrong path.
Yeah. You know, you said it, the air in your house recirculates, and the studies I've seen say it's 2 to 3 times more toxic, not just the mold, but with other things too, other VOCs that are coming off of your couch that you bought, the paint on your walls, the glue in your flooring, the flooring itself, right? Volatile organic compounds is what that is. And they're damaging, just like the mycotoxins and spores from mold. So your body, just like your ability to lift weights, has a threshold that it can handle to detox. All of ours are different. I explain it like this. And coming from a health guy, it makes some people chuckle. You've got your friend that can have one glass of wine and they're hungover the next day. Then you got your friends who will drink 2 bottles of wine and they're totally fine, right? We all have our threshold. You need to figure out what yours is. It's not perfectly with alcohol, right? That's not the perfect scenario, because your mold tolerance will be different than your wine tolerance. But we have a tolerance burden. So, you know, if your air outdoors is a 1, let's make that equivalent to 100 pounds. I can squat 100 pounds a lot of times in a row and I feel fine. However, if the house inside is 3 times more toxic, that's 300. How many breaths can I take at that stress point before my liver and my body's ability to clean this out no longer can keep up? Well, 300 pounds, I can squat it. So I can go to dinner with somebody who has a toxic home, myself. But how many times can I do that? Well, I can only squat 300 for 10, 20 reps. Okay. So can I go over to dinner every day of the month? No. Couldn't. Could I go once a month? Yeah, I probably can do that and survive. And that's my body's ability to handle it. So if you're already sick, you react like this. I worked with a functional medicine doctor yesterday who's going to be a patient of mine. He was a marathon running, avid athlete, super healthy, takes care of chronically ill people until he moved into the new office that had mold. And now he cannot tolerate any chemicals, any supplements. He's getting more fatigued. His body is crashing, right? He could not handle the toxic burden in that apartment, in that building, and crashed him. It wouldn't have crashed him overnight. And now when people walk in to the building that have mold, he smells them and it knocks like it. He's like, oh, and he'll feel sick for an hour after somebody came in that just lives in mold. And he'll ask them, and they do live in mold. That's how sensitive he is now because of where his body is now. So it's ever changing. Just like everything else in our lives, you can only handle so much, but the goal is to get yourself into the safest place because mold will stress your system. It's just to what degree. Yeah. So when we run an ERMI test or you do whatever other testing you can do, ERMI, Emma, you hire somebody that sends out for particle testing. They do air testing, all of the above. There's a threshold to which your body can no longer handle it. Why push it? We want to live in a very clean home because guess what? I'm releasing a summit on toxicity because you're flooring paint, water, food is getting filled with chemicals. We can't afford to also have mold anymore. Just the truth.
It's a harsh reality that we all are living with. And of course, you know, we have to do our part to look at health holistically and try to reduce the exposure to these things. You know, I try to buy products that are in glass or aluminum, you know, instead of plastic to avoid microplastics, even BPA free. You know, BPA has a cousin, right? That just because they market as BPA free doesn't mean that there's not some other BPA product that's BP product, right? BPC, right? So the reality of it is, like, we have to avoid, you know, start to make these conscious decisions to lower this amount of toxicity we're getting. And a lot of people are not cognizant of the dangers of what they're utilizing. We talked a little bit about kind of just the canary in the coal mine. We didn't use that term exactly, but that seems to be a popular term that people identify with, being the canary in the coal mine, having that heightened sense of awareness to know when you're in a toxic environment more immediately than maybe someone else. When it comes to families, I'm sure you see this a lot. You may have someone who is that canary in the coal mine. Maybe other members in the family are not noticing the symptoms quite so much. How are you seeing these members in the family getting tested and still showing up that there is an issue? And just even though they're not experiencing it as much, maybe they're just not fully in tune with the changes that's going on in their body and you can see that there's something going on?
So yeah, I get families, and fortunately, some of them have the financial ability to run a test for the sick person first, right? Mm-hmm. So we run a test, we see that canary. So the person that got sick first, honestly, so that's the canary for their family. And for those listening, canary in the coal mine goes back to, they used to put a canary in a coal mine, and when gas killed the canary, everybody left, right? So the canary was what signaled you of what's going on. So the canary in this instance is the person in your house that gets sick first and lets us know. There are people that will be just walk into a home and that's all it takes. And there are people that just got sick faster. So I'll get to test that person. And then we run a home test and maybe we don't find a whole lot. I'm like, that's weird. But we run a simple home test because maybe they're not all in on mold yet. Well, then they're like, well, I tell you, well, let's run my two kids and my husband for a urine mycotox. Okay, let's do it. So we run them and it's coming out. And we're like, oh, crap. And then we go to the next step, which is we send in a professional inspector. They find the mold. They hire somebody like yourself. They remediate the mold. And then those people that weren't fully sick, almost every single time, the kid's ADHD goes down. The daughter's digestive tract stuff goes away. Periods get lighter and easier. The husband has a little bit more energy, feels a little more vigor in his life. And we didn't treat them at all. They just were our guinea pig test subjects. And now the person that I'm working with at the canary in the coal mine is also getting better. But those other family members didn't really notice it because they just normalized it. They get better and they notice it because now they're aware of it.
Yeah, no, it's a good point. And I wanted to kind of drive that point home because I know that it happens. It happened with me, right? And I know that I normalized it and just said I was getting older and wasn't really thinking that, you know, it could be what I exposed myself to over time. I always thought like, well, I wear masks and stuff, you know, it shouldn't really be a problem. But when you dive into it, you know, the masks are 99% effective, right? So what's 1% of exposure times 10 years? A lot of exposure, right? So when you look at that, you know, it's easy to say, okay, I need to take this seriously and do something for my health. But yeah, I mean, some people have that hard time kind of differentiating between, do they really not feel it? You know, are they just normalizing some things? Are they more tired than they used to be? Are those frequent headaches happening have anything to do with this? And so it's like, you almost have to really get honest with yourself and say, you know, I don't feel the same way I felt over the last few years. My parents are in their late 50s now. And I'll sometimes hear my mom complain about how she's always tired. And, you know, I have no doubt that she has mold in her place. I know she was renovating her basement and kicking stuff around. I think we actually had a team go in there and remediate some stuff for her on the weekends. And, I alerted myself to the fact that you have to be dealing with something, right? Because you can't, there's no way you just, this is normal. You know, in your late 50s, I mean, she would just be like, I'm always tired. There's, you know, I'm just cause I'm getting older. And she would always use that excuse. I'm getting older. And that was kind of the red flag for me that like, no, you need to take this more seriously because it can't just be getting older. And what I don't think she's fully 100% on board because I think, you know, like most of us, we do tend to normalize things a little too difficult until we finally break, we get to that breaking point. But, you know, she's definitely a little bit more in tune than probably she was when we first started talking. It just kind of goes to show you from the society standpoint, like we have this challenge of kind of understanding how our health works. And when we hear other things like, you know, environmental toxins can be an issue, it's hard for us to kind of say, well, I can't see it. I don't really notice anything. And, you know, I just don't think that that's happening to me. Even though she sees it happening to clients, she knows what I do for a living, of course, right? It's always hard for her to be like, nope, that could be happening to me.
Yeah, well, we don't want to admit it. We don't want to think about it. Sure as heck don't want to pay for it. It's just another thing in life, right? Like, it'd be great if I didn't have to go to the bathroom. I could just spend the rest of my time doing other things. It'd be great if we didn't have to think about breathing, but we have to. So I think what needs to happen, and we need to maybe do it right now, create the new standard, right? So the new standard for people should be live well, live healthy, live vibrantly into their 80s. And I know people that have done this, and every one of us out here knows someone that is still gardening, still mowing, still driving, still going to their grocery store, still cooking at 80. Feels great. That should be the standard we want to achieve. And then not only the standard we want to achieve, the standard we should hold ourselves to. Unfortunately, the norm now, let's talk about the norms. The norms are every girl and 20 years old, almost every one of them, I'd say 90% of the population of the United States has some digestive issue, whether it's constipation, bloating, cramping, diarrhea, something is happening. And I ask this question to them all the time because I work with a ton of young women. That's the norm. The norm is 75% of 40-year-olds have a chronic illness in the United States. The norm is that women at 50 I'm just tired. It's part of my life. No, that's the stress of the lead generation having lead passed down to you and your bone. Now it's coming out when your bones are shifting because of hormone changes. No, the standard should be live well into your 80s, feel good. And if we let any other standard in, then it's just because it's normal now in this chronically toxic world that we live in. And chronically lazy, honestly, not that I'm saying any one of you that's listening is lazy, but we just don't move. We sit at desks all day. I'm sitting right now. And since I've become more of a educator and virtual doctor, I hurt more than before when I was on my feet walking from room to room. So if we create a standard and stick to it, a standard of health that is not created by the sick care industry or by doctors and pharmaceutical companies that want to drive revenue by creating lifetime clients. My goal is not to create a lifetime client. My goal is to give you an answer, to teach you how to get well, to have you stay well. And then if you want to call me once or twice a year just to keep up with it, great. If not, I gave you the tools to stay well. If we create those standards, then your mother and honestly, my mother, who I am in the same place with, who I educate every day, and I love her so much. And she is my worst patient because she only looks at me in diapers. And she knows what we do, but her ability to motivate to do those things sometimes isn't there. And that's why for me, like, it's a standard in my home with myself and my wife. Like, we're going to live a long time. We're going to live well. And here's how we're going to do it. And we're going to keep learning and we're going to keep putting effort to it every day.
That's brilliant. I think creating the new standard is exactly what we're here to try to do, right? Stop normalizing these things, give you the information, the resources, so you can take back control of your life and do something about these things instead of, you know, be mysteriously wondering if my house is making me sick, which it's unfortunately so many times it often is. When we talk about kind of just looking at creating that set of standards here, I think one of the most important things that I know you preach, obviously we know I preach, is putting your environment, the place that you spend the most time in, and giving that more understanding of how it's impacting your health, I think is going to be probably one of the biggest missing pieces of the equation when it comes to trying to figure out and optimize your health. So I know we're going to stress that. What are some other things that, you know, people can do to kind of get their health back on track? And this, it doesn't have to necessarily be them living in a toxic environment, but unfortunately, usually that is the case. What are some other things that people can do? You know, some quick tips of guidance of how to take back control of their health.
So I've sprinkled them in throughout here. So starter pack, right? Like the starter pack to health, remove toxins from your environment. That's your mold in your home. Stop using aluminum on your pans because that's toxic. Use glass Tupperware. So don't use scented candles that have a ton of chemicals in them that you have no idea what they do. Look at your hygiene products. Like, so remove toxins from your life. Make sure your mouth is clean. If you have a root canal, mercury amalgam, or a large cavitation, meaning you had a tooth removed like a wisdom tooth, and you haven't had a cone beam scan, get it looked at. So toxins, dental, and assess if you've ever had trauma in your life. And if you have, address it. Those are some of the major things that people miss that are keeping them ill and not allowing them to get well. And then from there, honestly, get clean water. That's the simplest. You can do it today. 170 million Americans are drinking radioactive waters. One study I saw, the next study, I just literally read it yesterday in the news. 63% of Americans are drinking radioactive water. So this is suppressing your system. Drink clean water. How you do that? You find distilled water. I don't care if it's even in plastic, which is not great. I have a machine that distills it and then I place it into glass. So if you can get glass bottled distilled water, that's perfect. If you get plastic, that's better than probably drinking your tap. So take a step toward cleaner water. That's something you can do absolutely right now today. You can't remediate your whole house today. You can't even inspect it probably today, besides maybe you going out and doing the inspection yourself, but you can't get a professional, but you can drink clean water today.
Oh, that's fantastic advice. Dr. Jabin, I want to thank you so much for being here today. Before we go, any last other parting wisdom that you can offer?
You know, the biggest piece is this can all be overwhelming. We talked about a lot of topics today. If there's mold in your home, it can be completely overwhelming. Take it one day at a time. Perfection isn't what we require to get well. It just isn't. Doing the best that you can, moving one step forward each day is what we look for. And as long as you're doing that, you're going to reach the top of the mountain. So just keep moving forward. Don't let the fear, the anxiety, the overwhelm of all of this hit you. Just drink clean water today and then add the next piece as it comes.
Do what you can, you know, reduce what you can, do what you can. And that's all that we can do, right? And taking those steps is better than not taking steps at all. So very well said, Dr. Jabin. Well, thank you for being here today. This was an amazing episode. And thank you for participating.
Thanks for having me.